Hey folks, welcome to the Projection Booth. I'm your host, Mike White. On this special episode, I'm going to be talking to Michael Lucker, the author of Crash Boom Bang. That's three exclamation points in there, one after each one of those. How to write action movies. Mr. Lucker has had quite the career. I'll be talking to him about that as well as his new book right now. I'm very curious how you got started in the entertainment business. From what I understand, you went to Boston College, is that right?
Boston University.
Yeah, that's the thing about Boston, you know, not a big college town.
Yeah, it was a horrible place to go to school. Now, I grew up in Atlanta, and I was writing songs for girls I had crushes on who wouldn't give me the time of day when I was a wee tyke. And then I started writing plays in high school, and people came and they laughed occasionally. And I was writing articles for the school paper, and I was having some luck with that. So I decided to go off somewhere where they could train me to write intelligently and charm girls. And I was accepted to the College of Communication in Boston University, and I went up there and froze my ass off for 4 years, and they let me out. And I was tired of the snow, and I wanted to write movies, so I moved westward and landed broke and naive in Los Angeles and started sending out resumes.
And who bit?
When I first landed, I was doing grunt work, grunt jobs on television specials, pretty much anything I could get, you know, my hands on. And I was miserable. I really wanted to work in feature films. And so I found the Hollywood Creative Directory at the Samuel French bookstore on Ventura Boulevard. And in it, they had the addresses of everybody who produced movies in town. And I sent 100 resumes to all my favorites, from John Avildsen to Robert Zemeckis. And I got one interview from those 100 resumes, and it was with Amblin Entertainment, Steven Spielberg's company. I went in for the interview. I showered first, I shaved, and they hired me. And I got the job as one of six production assistants in the company. And then after my being there 2 weeks, they said, "Steven's personal production assistant was leaving. Would you like the job?" And I said yes. And I met Steven on a Friday and started on a Monday. And I worked for him for a year and a half.
When was this? What kind of projects were you working on with him?
I was probably about 21, 22 at the time. And I came on in post-production on Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. So my first day on set with Steven, or not on set, but in post, was doing ADR with Sean Connery in the scene where he and Harrison Ford are tied to the chairs in the room that's on fire. Then we went on and did Always. Steve was also producing Arachnophobia, Back to the Future 2 and 3, Dad, Joe vs. the Volcano, and prepping Jurassic Park. So it was an exciting time to be there.
And when did you finally get to apply your writing skills?
Well, I was writing then. I knew I wanted to write. In fact, I didn't have much time to write because I was working 12-hour days for Steven. And I didn't have enough money for a computer. So I would write at Amblin at night after everybody was gone. And I was just typing and typing and typing. And with every little, you know, minute that I had, I was working late at night. And then finally I got one script done that I was really proud of, called Insecurity. It's about two guys getting out of college and getting drafted into the FBI, only to find out that they were pawns set up. And I sent them out to a few folks, and nothing came of it. But I got one opportunity to do a rewrite for somebody else on spec, and I did that. And I was confident enough in my writing abilities to leave my day job and go off and become a screenwriter. And I quickly went broke, realized I needed a day job while I continued to try and forge my screenwriting career. So then I got a job at Disney working in creative affairs for Hollywood Pictures, and was there for a year or so. And it allowed me to work with all the guys who were buying the scripts, which was cool. It gave me a chance to see the other side of the desk, really. And then from there, I wrote another script or two And I ended up partnering with a buddy of mine, and we optioned a script to Paramount, got hired to write a script to Paramount, and then I quit my job again. And this time I had enough money to last me a little while longer.
I know that being a screenwriter has to be one of the most thankless jobs that's out there, especially the whole idea of doing rewrites, uncredited rewrites, having your scripts just molder out there, just all of those horrible things that happen. What are some of the things that you worked on that we might not know that you worked on in those early days?
That's nice of you to ask, and it's nice to have somebody understand the plight of the screenwriter. I think the rewards often really come in the actual writing and the typing itself. And if you're not enjoying that part, if you're not enjoying the ride, then yeah, it can be kind of a rocky road. When you put them out there into, the universe, yeah, some people like them, some people don't. Sometimes they buy them, sometimes they don't. There's a lot of ups and downs. If you're referring to the movies that got made or the ones that didn't get made, the movies that got made, there was Vampire in Brooklyn with Eddie Murphy. I was lucky enough to, there was a movie that didn't get made. It was a love story that we had Matthew McConaughey attached to star in at Lionsgate that fell through called The Traitor. But from that, we got asked by DreamWorks to write an animated movie called Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron. And that led to great success with that movie. And then also it led to Disney pulling us back to work on 5 other animated movies for them, and which all got made. So that was a nice little stretch of movies getting done. I think for every screenwriter who gets a movie made, there's a stack of movies that don't get made. And that is one of the frustrating things, is sometimes the ones that are on your desk collecting dust hold some of your favorite moments and your favorite lines.
Tell me, how did you get involved with Vampire in Brooklyn?
My writing partner at the time, Chris Parker, had been working for Wes Craven as sort of a production grunt. And he was kind enough to take a look at another script of ours called Little Outlaws, a Western family fun adventure that we'd done. And he really liked it and liked our writing. Chris and I had gone off to write and become professional writers, quote unquote, without, much experience and without much money in the bank. But we were out there kind of slugging it out. And Wes was offered the opportunity to direct Eddie in Vampire. And they were out to lots of big writers that lived in lots of big houses. And they couldn't find anybody that could crack the story. And they sent it to us to read. Actually, I'll never forget, we're sitting in my little house that I share with a couple of roommates down in Hermosa Beach. And the phone rang. And I looked at the phone in the room and I went, that's probably Wes Craven calling us to write the Eddie Murphy movie. And Chris answered it. And sure enough, it was his producing partner, Marianne Madalena, who had asked if we would be interested in looking at the draft that they had to see if we could fix it. And they sent it to us like on a Wednesday, and they asked us to meet with them on a Thursday. We read it overnight. We were up all night. We broke it down. We put it back together. We went in and met with them on Thursday. We pitched it, and they said, you guys are telling us stuff we hadn't heard before, and this sounds great. We'd like you to pitch it to Bob Jaffe. At the time, he was the VP of production at Paramount. And we said, great. And they said, when? And they said, tomorrow. We're like, what? Okay. So, but they had a bunch of suggestions. So we went back to the beach and we broke the script back down. We incorporated their suggestions. We went in and we pitched it to Bob Jaffe on Friday. And he said, this is great. You're telling us stuff we haven't heard before. And we're in a race against Universal to try and get Eddie in our movie. So we'd like you to pitch this to John Goldwyn, president of Paramount at the time. We're like, great. He said, when? He said, Monday. But make these changes. So we went back over the weekend. We broke it down. We put it back together. We went in and pitched to John Goldwyn on Monday. He said, this is great. We want you to pitch it to Eddie Murphy. And we were like, what? He said, yeah. We want you guys to get in the room with Eddie. And we're like, great. Is he in Is he on the lot? Is he in Beverly Hills? You know, we're happy to go to his house. They go, no, he's in New York, which is where you're going tomorrow. And so the next morning, like a limousine pulls up in front of, you know, my, you know, broken down house in Hermosa Beach, picks me up. We pick up Chris. We go to the airport. We get on the plane. And the next day we pitched the idea to Eddie and he loved it. We got the gig.
I'm so glad that you got the gig because it just feels like, even though I knew the end of the story, it feels like one of those things where it's like we went through all these hoops and then eventually we failed. So I'm glad that that didn't happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, there's plenty of those stories. But fortunately, this one turns out where we did get the gig. And, you know, there's some things I'm really proud of in the movie. There's a few things I wish could be better, but it was an exciting time for us to get a movie made. With, you know, Eddie Murphy was one of my idols.
It's such an odd combination, though, Wes Craven directing and Eddie Murphy starring.
You're so right. And that was one of the challenges. And if anybody knows the story behind it, if they don't yet, they're about to find out. Wes Craven, as talented and brilliant and kind as he was, he basically wanted, you know, Freddy Krueger as a brother. You know, he wanted like the black Freddy Krueger. And Paramount had tremendous success with Beverly Hills Cop, and they wanted to have, you know, Axel Foley basically as a vampire. Funny Eddie doing his shtick. And Eddie wanted this to be like his dramatic debut. And we were like, what? And so we were, you know, given the task of kind of combining Axel Foley and Freddy Krueger and Hamlet and trying to pull it off. So that's part of the reasons that the tone is not quite as even Steven as it could be.
How much did the film change from what you were pitching to what it ended up being when it came out?
Great question. It changed quite a bit. We were really excited about what we had pitched. And then by the time everybody had, you know, shared their thoughts, we had quite a mountain to climb. And we climbed it as effectively and efficiently as we could to a point where Sherry Lansing greenlit the movie. And we were off to the races. But when we were sitting in dailies watching the footage come in, it was evident that the movie that was being shot was tonally a bit different from what we had put on the page. And ultimately, I think the studio made some choices budgetarily that affected the final outcome of the movie as well.
You've written quite a few animated films, and I'm curious, how was that transition of writing for quote-unquote real people or real situations to writing animated situations?
It was easier than I expected it to be. I grew up on action. I always wanted to write action, you know, make action movies. And I wasn't expecting the call at all to do an animated movie. But then when we got the gig, I found tremendous creative license, not only to use my action chops, if you will, but also to relay messages and themes that would be inspiring to children, families, maybe adults, you know, around the world. And also tell stories that had depth and had heart and allowed my imagination just to run wild. Because when you have crickets and dogs and dragons and butterflies all talking and living and, you know, coexisting in space, it gives you great latitude as a screenwriter. And I found that incredibly liberating.
I know that you've written sequels for Mulan and Lilo and Stitch and even Emperor's New Groove. When it comes to those are, I don't want to say relatively new, but within the scheme of things, those are relatively new properties compared to something like 101 Dalmatians. Did you have any trepidation going into 101 Dalmatians and writing a sequel to something that is beloved by so many people?
I don't think there was any trepidation. I don't know if that was because we were naive or confident or cocky or just excited to be a part, but we looked at story and character based on the merits of what we were given and what had stood before us. And it didn't really matter to us if it came out the year before or it came out 6 years before, or if it made $1 million or it made $100 million. We're kind of carpenters, you know, craftsmen, and our job is to go in and work with the materials we're given. We were confident enough to do work that they were happy enough to put up on the screen.
When I look at something like Home on the Range, where there's so many uncredited writers, what is that experience like for you coming in and working on something like that?
Working in Hollywood as a screenwriter is really interesting because there may only be two or three or four writers' names on the screen, but oftentimes there's many writers and certainly many creative voices that play a role in, you know, the final outcome. In animation, it's even more so. I think the studios have so much at stake, and it takes so long, and it's a highly collaborative process in that you have so many artists working in one location for extended periods of time with the studio and with producers and directors and writers, that they tend to funnel writers in and out. So on some of the animated movies that I've been fortunate to be a part of, we may have only been hired to come in and punch up the dialogue for 4 weeks, or maybe fix a story over 8 weeks, or maybe just, you know, elevate the action over 3 weeks. Home on the Range was unique in that I think we were on it for close to a year. And it was a big feature film coming out that the studio was really excited about. The funny thing is the movie that we ended up writing was not the one we were hired to write. And I don't mean they changed the project. I mean, they changed the shape of the movie that we were on. We were originally brought on to write a story about a little cool cow named Bullet. And we got hired to do that. And they brought us into the room. And by the time I think we got there, they said, yeah, Bullet's gone. And we have three old women cows. And now you're writing for them. We're like, okay. And so we did our best and they were happy. And so they kept us around and we worked, you know, we had an office at Disney for a long time on that movie. And we worked, you know, day and night with all those talented folks to try and make it the best movie we could.
Tell me about your move back down to Atlanta.
After the slings and arrows of Los Angeles and enjoying a little bit of success there, I got tired of the traffic and the smog and slugging it out for project after project. Frankly, I missed the seasons and the trees and the friendly folks and Lynyrd Skynyrd on the radio that I grew up with down south in Atlanta. And I was a little burnt out and I came back home and tried to work from here, going back and forth between Atlanta and Los Angeles. And so I kept an apartment in LA for a while, and I had a nice place back home around, you know, the sights and sounds and friends and family that I grew up with. And it was hard, frankly. It wasn't as easy for me to be removed from Los Angeles, but it was good for my soul. And so I tried to make it work. Ultimately, I drifted away a little bit from the day-to-day of screenwriting, but I also found there was opportunities here for me to direct and produce. Because I wasn't in the middle of nowhere. I was in Atlanta, the home of Ted Turner and CNN and TBS and TNT. And the film industry and entertainment industry was just growing by leaps and bounds. So I've been fortunate to be a small part of it and get my shot at directing a few things and producing a few things. And also, you know, in recent years, teaching a few things to those that are aspiring to get into the industry.
Right. Yeah. You've been at Emory University for a couple of years now. How long has that been?
I've been at Emory for 4 years.
What's your approach when you try to teach screenwriting to somebody?
Teaching screenwriting was much more fun than I expected it to be. When I came back to Atlanta, people started asking me to share what I had learned. And they said, hey, can you come speak at this event? Or would you mind lecturing to our writers group? And I went and I spoke, and people laughed and clapped and came up to me afterward and said how helpful it was. And I really enjoyed being able to share what I had learned, you know, the hard way in Los Angeles, and found it very rewarding to be able to pass it on. And then when I got the opportunity to start teaching at the university level for Emory and others, then I found a bunch of bright, eager minds that were driven to succeed and had the wherewithal, the capability and drive to go to Los Angeles, go to New York, go to London, go to wherever they needed to go, or just go down the street in Atlanta to help get their movies made or to help get their stories told. In addition to Emory, I've been invited to be an instructor at the University of North Georgia, which is a fantastic film and media program that's growing by leaps and bounds also. And also at Reinhardt University and their new MFA in creative writing program. And I've found that my approach is largely the same for teaching people how to write movies. That is to start with a great idea, figure out who's going to go in it, map out that idea structurally, then kind of build in the scenes one after another in a detailed outline, and then kind of start at the beginning and start working your way through it, start climbing the mountain. I've refined my approach over the last several years teaching, beyond that lecturing, but I think a lot of the same tenets still apply.
You were talking about when you were working on Interview with the Vampire, the whole idea of the breaking down and building it back up, putting it back together. Is that what you're talking about when it comes to the outlining and the breakdown of the scenes?
Well, first, it wasn't Interview with a Vampire. I would have liked to have written that one, but instead, I wrote Vampire in Brooklyn.
Why did I screw that up? Jeez.
That's all right. Easy mistake to make. If you confused it with, like, say, Bambi, that would have been awkward, I think. But yeah. No. So I think the same principles still apply. You know, if you look at a story, I mean, we screenwriters are trained in what makes stories work. And when you read one and it doesn't work, if you've studied the craft and done your work, you will recognize pretty readily that, you know, the inciting incident comes too late, but the plot point doesn't twist the story in a way that the audience isn't expecting, or that the scenes are not pushing the story forward, or, you know, exposition is coming, you know, too obviously, or that the ending is not as climactic as it should be, or the theme's not resonant. You will recognize those things and you will be able to say, this isn't working. How do we fix it? And so that's kind of what I try to teach to my students, is to understand what makes good stories work at the outset so that they can sell their stories and they'll be hired to rewrite others.
And when did you decide to write a book about how to write screenplays?
I'm slow. People have been telling me I should write a book for a number of years. All of my students have been telling me I should write a book. My friends have been telling me to write a book. Family's been telling me to write a book. And like all, you know, good action heroes, I'm reluctant to change. So ultimately, I think I had a little bit of time and I said, you know what? Let me just write a chapter and see what it feels like. And this was about a year and a half ago, I'd say. And I wrote a chapter, and I shared it with a couple of my writing buddies who'd written books or had, you know, some familiarity with the publishing world. And they said, this is great, Mike. You should share this with publishers. I was bewildered. I said, it's not done. It's just a chapter. And they wisely said, this is the time you share your writing with the publisher to involve them in the process, to solicit their feedback and incorporate their direction should they be interested. I was like, all right, well, who do I send it to? And my good friend Jason James sent me the website of Michael Wiese Productions, who's the number one publisher of independent film and screenwriting books in the world. And he said, these guys. So I went to the website and I looked down and I found like the PDF that you download if you're interested in submitting a book idea to them. And I went to like page 10 in the PDF, and therein lies an email address to who you jot a note if you're interested. And I wrote a one paragraph email to them saying, hey, I'm Mike. I used to work for Steven Spielberg. I wrote a bunch of movies, and now I'm teaching at Emory University, and I'm writing a book. Are you interested? And they wrote me back within an hour and said, we are. And it began a fantastic journey into a whole new chapter of my own life.
To take what you've learned over all these years and to try to encapsulate it into couple hundred pages, that must have been pretty daunting.
The writing about the craft was fun and easy. The writing about myself was awkward and uncomfortable because I tend to keep my personal life pretty personal. But I found in my classes and in my own workshops at Screenwriter School that when I give little anecdotes about the tough times that I faced, or this embarrassing thing that happened in this meeting, or this challenge that we had on set, those are the things that really bring the screenwriting craft to life for students and also make it approachable. People feel like it's tangible. They feel like they can do it. And so I thought that it would be important for me to share embarrassing anecdotes about myself in the book as well. Each chapter, there's 12 chapters in the book, and I'll walk you through the entire process of writing the screenplay. And each chapter begins with a different little story from some moment in my screenwriting career. Some were at the beginning and some were more recently. But hopefully they all inspire those who read it to take to the blank page to write their own stories and have the confidence to get it out there in the world.
You not only have written this book, you're still teaching, but you're also still producing. Can you tell me a little bit about Lucky Dog Filmworks?
When I came back to Atlanta and I started being invited to direct and produce for Turner and TBS and do commercial content, I needed a brick and mortar shop for that. And so I set up Lucky Dog. And Lucky Dog was my nickname in college based on my last name. And I just kind of slapped on a sign out front of my loft studio. It became the home for whatever I was creating. I found that I had the opportunity to start developing and producing original content in the unscripted space. The barriers of entry were less than the scripted side. I didn't necessarily have to be in Los Angeles, so I soon found myself developing shows for the likes of HGTV and A&E and OWN and MSNBC and Cartoon Network. A funny thing happened along the way in that I found that I didn't enjoy producing content as much as I did writing. I'd rather leave the logistics, the coordinating, the HR, the accounting, the managing to other really smart people. Focus on the storytelling, because that's the part that really makes me feel alive and that I really have more fun with. So consequently, I've done less producing with Lucky Dog and just use it as sort of the venue for the projects that I'm continued to ask to write.
Is the best place for people to pick up the book over at screenwriterschool.com?
That is a place they can pick it up. They can pick it up at michaelweeseyproductions.com. They can pick it up at amazon.com. They can pick it up at Barnes & Noble's all over country.
Very cool. The name of the book is Crash Boom Bang, How to Write Action Movies. And I have one more question for you, Mr. Lucker. You were talking earlier about how you're writing plays, you're writing songs, you're doing all this stuff in order to woo a girl. Did you finally woo a girl with your writing?
I did, actually. And you know what's funny is with my teaching as well. So they've both led me to the promised land.
That's your happy ending right there, I suppose.
We suppose, right. Leave it at that.
Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been a real pleasure talking with you.
And as well you. Thanks so much for having me.
It's oh so quiet. It's oh so still. You're all alone and so peaceful until you fall in love. Zing boom, the sky up above. Zing boom, it's caving in. You've never been so nuts about a guy. You wanna laugh, you wanna cry, you cross your heart and hope to die. Till it's over, and then it's nice and quiet. But soon again starts another big riot. You blow up. Zing boom, the devil cuts loose. Zing boom, so what's the use? Wham bam, falling in love.
It's all so quiet. It's all so still.
Well, you almost have a fit. This guy is George and I got hit. There's no mistake, 'cause this is it! Till it's over, and then it's nice and quiet. But soon again starts another big riot.